Good morning, everybody. We are in chapter seven of Daniel. And even though Kim isn't here, I remember exactly where we were up to. How do you like that? In chapter seven, which is the last chapter in Aramaic, the chapter is divided into two parts. The first 14 psukim of chapter 7 of the dream of Daniel, the next 14 psukim are going to be the interpretation of the dream and its meaning. Now, if you don't remember precisely what the dream was, well, you're going to see most of it during the course of the interpretation and the commentary. So here it is. What you have to remember is that there were four beasts that came out of the. Three of them had some kind of a form that was recognizable. The first one was like a lion, and it had the wings of an eagle. The second one was like a bear. The third was like a leopard. The fourth was extremely frightening, caused trembling, and really shook Daniel. Now, it had ten horns. Three horns fell out, and then a small horn with eyes and a big mouth came out at the place where the three horns had been. And then, after he sees all of those, so then, of course, the extremely significant pasuk that we talked a little bit about last week is in the middle of pasuk 13, and we're going to have to get back to that, to the middle of pasuk 13. Chazei haveit bechazei leilya, I saw in the vision of the night va'aru imanonei shemaya. And behold, with the clouds of the heavens, kivar enosh asar havei. It's not a beast anymore. This time it is a man who's coming with the clouds. And who does he come to? He comes to the Atik Yomei. The Atik Yomei is God, the ancient one who is sitting in judgment. In broad terms, of course, the four beasts represent four kingdoms, and these four kingdoms are going to rule until such time that all of that will end, and the fifth kingdom is going to emerge. The fifth kingdom is going to be Klal Yisrael, led by Mashiach, and that kingdom will remain forever and ever after, and it is a kingdom that is going to sweep the world with a great message. And that's really in the Oleinu. Al kenikaver l'cha Hashem l'keinu lir'ot mehira b'tiferet uzecha l'havi. You're going to remove all idolatry, all blasphemy from the world, and then there's going to come the great time of God's divine rule through Klal Yisrael. So we're up to pasuk 15. It et kiryat ruchi. Anod Daniel, bigo nidine. The word et kiryat is open to a great deal of discussion. It can mean that my spirit pounded within me, my spirit was frightened, my spirit became faint and weak. Anod Daniel, I Daniel, my spirit became weak. Bigo nidine, in her scabbard. A nidnadan, or a nidene, is the scabbard of a sword. Now, the image that he's using is the soul inside the body is like the sword inside the scabbard. And he feels like his neshama, his insides, are shaking. V'chazvei reishi yivaha lunani, and the thoughts of my head caused me to tremble and be frightened. kirvat kirvet al chad min ka amaya. I drew close. In his dream, he takes the initiative. Kirvat, I drew close. Al chad min ka amaya, to one of the people who is standing there. Now remember, he is in the presence of the Atik Yomin. In his dream, he sees the heavenly throne, and God is sitting in judgment, and obviously there are all sorts of angels on all sorts of God, on all of God's sides, and therefore I came to one who is standing there. It means that he approaches a malach. Malachim omdim, the malachim stand mimalo, around God and above him. Sort of the legions of God are standing there. So he went over to one who is standing there. V'yatziva ev eimine al kol dina. V'yatziva means I wanted to know the absolute truth. Emet v'yatziv. I wanted to know ev eimine. The word ev e we have had, eight, nine times already. I asked of him. I asked ev eimine. It really should be read. I asked of him, Yatziva, tell me the truth. I'll call Dino, all of this, va'amarli, and he said it to me, he told me, u'fishar milaya yahodi inani, and the interpretation of this thing, he let me know. Who is this one? Which malach is it to whom? Which angel does he approach? Rav Sadia Gaon says that the angel that he approaches is Michael, because in a later chapter, we're going to have Gabriel speaking to Daniel, the Malach Gabriel. And the Malach Gabriel later is going to say, he's going to refer to Michael, and he's going to say, V'hine Michael, Echad Hasarim HaRishonim. Michael, we're going to see, is one of the first officers standing around God, which means if he draws close to the one who is standing there, without his name being mentioned, then he has to be the most important one there, and that is Michael. And where else do we have somebody approaching an angel, and he doesn't know that he's an angel, but he is? Yosef. Yosef was out in the field. He doesn't find his brothers. V'hinei ish, v'yimtza ehu ish, and a man found him. A man found him, and Rashi brings over there, Ein ish ha'amor kan ella, the ish is Gabriel. How does Rashi there know that the ish, the man who approaches Yosef, just at that crucial moment, that all that God has planned for Jewish history seems to be have gone awry? Because remember, it's important for Yosef to be sold to Mitzrayim, so that Klal Yisrael is going to go down to Mitzrayim. But he has to meet up with his brothers. He comes to Shechem, and his brothers aren't there. It would seem like all of God's plans, well-laid plans, are going to go to naught, but of course not. There's always the moment, there's always the means of a mid-course correction. So the Kodesh immediately sends Gabriel down there, and Gabriel is the one who's already going to direct Yosef in the right direction. And a few years ago in a Chumash year, we said the great words of the Ramban, four words of the Ramban. From here we learn, Shehagzeira emet, v'hacharitzut sheker. Hagzeira emet, God's divine decree is always true. V'hacharitzut, and all of man's attempts to undo God's plan, is all falsehood. Because here you would have thought that, listen, Yaakov sends Yosef to see how his brothers are doing, which of course means he has to meet up with his brothers because they're going to sell him to Egypt. Sell him to Egypt means that ultimately Yaakov and his family are going to come. Yaakov and his whole family are going to come down to Egypt. But something has gone wrong. He comes to Shechem. The brothers aren't in Shechem. So the Rebbe Shem sends the ish. And how does Rashi there know that the ish is Gavriel? Because later on, over here in chapter 9, it's going to say, for her ish, Gavriel. So, just like it says over there, there was an ish, a man who found Yosef, and asks him, what are you looking for? The ish the ish by Yosef is the ish by Daniel, who is her ish Gavriel. And over here also, we're talking about somebody who's standing there. Ko amaya means, Daniel says, I went over to the one who was standing there. About which Malach have we heard that he stands? Gavriel later is going to tell us that Michael is the one of those who stands first near God. And I asked of him, I want you to tell me what's it all about. I want an interpretation of the dream. Pasuk Yud Zayin. Elaine, and this is already Michael who is speaking. And remember, it's Rav Sadia Goin who says that this is Michael. Elaine chevosa ravrevosa, these big beasts. The inin arba, who are four, those four. Arba'a malchin yekumen min ara. There are four kingdoms that will arise. Yekumen min ara. Four kingdoms are going to arise from the earth. V'yekablun malchuta. But at the end, you know who's going to receive the kingdom after these four will have passed from the earth. V'yekablun malchuta kadishe elyonin. The holy ones, the super holy ones, or the holy ones from on high. V'yaksunun malchuta ad alma. Yaksunun means they will inherit. They will inherit the kingdom ad alma into eternity. The fifth kingdom, the kingdom of the kadishe elyonin, the holy ones, and that's going to be Klal Yisrael. That kingdom is going to inherit Malchut Ad Olma forever. Va'ad Olam Olmaya, until the forever of forever. Me'ata V'ad Olam. Huh? Oh. How do we know he's talking about Israel? Oh. Because they're the Kadishe Elyonim. Because who are the ones that are referred to as Kedoshim in Torah? God says, V'atem tihiyu li, you shall be unto me mamlechet kohanim v'goy kadosh. You should be the go kadosh. And furthermore, God says in Torah, u'letiticha elyon. God is going to make you elyon above all other, that's in Dvarim, 26, chapter 19. Elyon describes Israel. Kedoshim describes Israel. If you have Kedok Kadishe Elyonin together, it certainly describes only Israel. No other people is referred to in Tanakh as Kadosh. No other people is referred to in Tanakh as Elyon. Certainly if we have Kadishe Elyonin together, it means the Jewish people. Yes?
The fact that he needed Michael to help him with the interpretation, the lower level of
Gula. Well, I would say that. Remember, it's a nevuah, therefore, that is coming through an angel. Right? It is. There's no question about it. As I was saying last week, this is the period of nevuah is coming to an end. The lights are flickering. There are occasional brownouts, and soon after Daniel, the light of prophecy is going to come to an end.
Why didn't he put it together with the first four kingdoms?
You can't. That question I'm not going to accept right now for the following reason, because there are going to be another four chapters talking about the four kingdoms. No. It's going to be the same four kingdoms. We're going to find sort of different views or different aspects and different facets of the four kingdoms. That's what it's all going to be until the end now. So you're just going to have patience. Egdayin, Pasuk 19. Egdayin tzvit liyatzava. The word tzvit and yatzava are two different words. The word tzvit or tzavi we've had a number of times here. The word tzavi means to want. Liyatzava is the word that we had before, to know the truth, the solid truth. Edayin tzivit liyatzava, then I wanted to know the whole truth. Al chevatarifi oita, about the fourth beast. The fourth beast was the one that struck the greatest terror in Daniel. He wanted to know more about that fourth beast. The other three, as we pointed out, had some kind of a shape or a form that was recognizable. The lion, the bear, the leopard. The fourth is so frightening and so different that he can't even give it the form or the name of some kind of a beast. He wanted to know about that fourth one. Dihavashonyo min kulhom, because that one was different than all of them. Dechila yatira, it was greatly frightening. And he now recalls, Shinai di parzel vitivradin achosh, it has teeth of metal, and it has fingernails of copper, yes, Tziporanayim. And not only that, whatever it touches, it crushes. Absolutely. Ochla, madaka, it eats, and it crushes. Ushara, and whatever is left, beraglai rofsa, it tramples utterly and completely with its feet. There is something so frighteningly destructive about this fourth animal. Valkarnaya, Asar de Beresha, I told you that we're going to have a little bit of a review. The 10 horns that it has in its head. The Ochari di Silkas, and after the other one, the next one that comes out, Unefalu min Kodamai Tlos, while three fall out, there is a small one that comes, the Karno di Kain, and that horn. The Einin light has eyes, Ufum memalil Ravrabon, and a mouth that speaks big talk. Ravrabon over here means that it speaks with chutzpah, with blasphemy, a rejection of God and everything that He stands for. Bechezbe Rav min Chavrota, and its appearance was so much bigger than all of her friends. In other words, in comparison, the other three beasts were small, but this one is big. Obviously, this is going to represent a kingdom that is going to be so destructive to the Jewish people, and for that matter, the world. And yes, it's going to be Edom, Rome, Yishmael, the Mepharshim say, all of those. In other words, everything from Churban HaBayit until now falls under the category of this fourth great beast. Chaze Aveit, I saw the Karno di Kain of the Krav im Kadishin. That horn 11, I would say, waged war with the Holy Ones, went to war against the Holy Ones, the Jewish people, the Yochla Lahon, and was able to succeed against them. We're talking about a world really, against the Jewish people, the Kadishin. Ad, and the only one who's going to save them, the only one about whom we can say he's Tov La Yehudim, is the Atik Yomin. Ad, the Ata Atik Yomaya, until the Ancient One came, the Dina Yehiv, and he brings judgment and justice to the world, and therefore he's going to stand together with Kadishe El Yonin, with the Holy Ones from on high. God is going to stand by the Jewish people. The Zimna Mitar, and the time has arrived, U Malchuta Hechesinu Kadishin, and kingdom was inherited by the Holy Ones shall inherit the kingdom of the earth. Kain Amar, this is what he said. This is the Malach, again speaking to, though it's not said in the Pasuk, but it's understood that it's the Malach now speaking, Michael, who's speaking to Daniel. and he tells him Chevatarvi Oita, the fourth beast. Malchurvi Oyo Tehavoba Ara. There's going to be a fourth kingdom on the face of the earth. The Tishne Min Kol Malchavada that is going to be different from all of the kingdoms that preceded it. V'teichul kol ara, it will destroy the whole earth. The word teichul le'echol means not only to eat, but it also means to
devour
or consume. Shvel chamos halakoy mashelo yoducha v'al mamlachot asher b'shimcholo kro ki achlu et Yaakov. They have consumed and destroyed Yaakov. Le'echol means to destroy. This kingdom will destroy the whole earth. Utidushina bitantkina, and it will grind and crush. Disha tidushne, that we really have in Hebrew as well. Disha is threshing, right? It's one of the malachas of Shabbos. Ladush tidushina is to grind. Vitadikina also comes from the Hebrew dak, to chop something up in very small pieces, disha and dak. The karnaya asar mina malchuta, the 10 crowns, mina malchuta, from that kingdom. Why were there 10 crowns? 10 crowns represents 10 kings that will arise from that kingdom. Asra malchin yekumun, 10 kings will arise. V'acharon yekum achareyan, and afterwards will arise another one. V'hu yishnei min kadmaya, and he will be different than all of the others. Utlota malchin yehashpil, and he will bring down 3 kings. Now, of course, some of the Mefarshim learn that this fourth kingdom really represents the kingdom of Greece. And one of the Mefarshim even lists 10 kings from the kingdom of Greece until Antiochus. And some of the kings were good to the Jewish people. It's Antiochus at the end who is the cruel and destructive one who goes to war against the Jewish people. But it is in the nature of these kind of visions that they are open to a number of interpretations, not because the interpretations contradict with one another, but precisely on the contrary, because the vision is such that it can include within itself many of the events of history. And it's really going to include events ad ha yom hazeh. We're going to see the timing right away. But you're still going to hang in. We're not giving you all of the. I'm sorry, you know, we still don't have. We don't have it all down pat. Umilin litzavilo yemalel. This last kingdom is going to say words against the Eloi, the Great One. He will speak out against God. It will be a blasphemous kingdom, a kingdom that rejects God. Umilin litzad Eloi yemalel, and words toward Eloi, the Almighty One, he will speak. Ulekadeshe elyonin yevalei, and he will want to destroy kadeshe elyonin, the Jewish people. The Jewish people are going to be under threat of total destruction. Biyizbar lashnoya zimnin vedat. Biyizbar, really, in Aramaic we have it in the Gemara from the word svara. Svara means something that one thinks, or it can also mean hope. In Hebrew it means hope. In Ashrei, Einechol Eilecha Yisaberu. There it's with a sin, but sin and samach are interchangeable, certainly from Hebrew to Aramaic. What does it mean, Einechol Eilecha Yisaberu? The eyes of all Yisaberu look toward you with hope. We all look toward you with hope. In other words, we have thoughts and hopes and anticipations.
The Hebrew word also means
think, sabur. The sabur is taken from the Aramaic. Yeah, we use it, but it comes from the Aramaic, yes? Shever? Ah, that's not bad. You're referring to the pasuk of Bohoniyochishvol Hishover. By Yonah. Yeah, well, if you weren't thinking about that, I'm telling you, you should think about that. Right. Huh? Lishbor bor is to purchase. Excellent. Just one moment. Just one moment. She said something excellent, and I want to stop there for a minute. Yeah. All right. She gets it. She's going to get a star. Where does it say Halahain to Saberna? I knew you knew it. When Ruth and Naomi and Orpah have begun their journey from Moab toward Eretz Yisrael, and Ruth stops on the Naomi stops on the road and says, "Go back. What do you have to hope for? Even if I would be with a man tonight and I would become pregnant and I would have a child, are you going to wait for them to grow up in order to marry them?" Halohain tisaberna, the pasuk says. Naomi says to them, are you going to wait in anticipation and hope for them? That's the same word as Einechol, the eyes of all. In Ashrei Eilecho Yisabedu, look toward you with hope and anticipation. And that means it's a thought that goes through one's mind. That's Svara. And therefore the word over here is talking about this fourth and this last kingdom, v'yizbar l'hashnoyo zimnin v'dat, he is going to think, he's going to hope, he's going to anticipate to change times and religion. And I'll explain that in a moment. V'yityahavun b'yedei and kadishei elyonin, the holy ones from on high, the Jewish people, are going to be given into his hands ad idon v'idanin uflag idon. For the present, don't even begin to ask me what these few words mean. We will get back to them. Idon means a time, and we're going to see the word where we have it. V'idanin, a time, and times. Uflag idon, and half of a time. So, I mean, I could give it, I'll give you a simple shot. Idan means a measure of time. Idanin is a plural, so that's two measures of time. How much is one plus two? Three, very good. And then a plag idan? Huh? Yes, she also gets the stuff, of course. A plag idan is a half of that time. So now, if we would say that the unit of idan is a year, then idan, the idanin, uplag idan, is 3.5 years. So those who say that this crown, this horn, is the tenth member of the Greek kingdom, then it refers to Antiochus. So the Yevonim came into the Bet HaMikdash and defiled the entire Bet HaMikdash. How long was the Bet HaMikdash defiled? For 3.5 years. 3.5 years later, the Hashmonaim came in and they found the jar of oil and they started all over again. That's the simple meaning of Idan v'Idanin uplag Idan. But remember, as we said, this final kingdom that wants to destroy utterly the Jewish people may be talking about a kingdom much, much further down the line historically. Much, much further down the line. Now, I can't explain according to the Mefarshim that learned that this is referring to the Greeks in the times of the Hashmonaim. I can explain what it means. V'yizbar l'hashnoya zimnin v'dat. They want to change times and religion. One of my great... That's it, precisely. One of my better shiurim. I was going to say great, but I decided to be humble. And from great, I turned it into one of my better shiurim. Is one that explains why it was that the Greeks decreed against Rosh Chodesh. What did they want from the poor Rosh Chodesh? obviously, if they remove Rosh Chodesh, if they stop the whole idea of Rosh Chodesh, it means, therefore, that there are not going to be Yom Tovim by Klal Yisrael. And if there are no Yom Tovim by Klal Yisrael, in other words, we don't know when Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot are, because the Sanhedrin has been stopped from calculating the calendar, so by destroying Zimnin, the times, you therefore, of course, destroy that as well. The religion is, our religion is dependent on time. We have to know. That's why Chodesh Hazeh Lachem, this month shall be to you the first of months. Everything depends on our calculation of time, and this is what the Greeks wanted to undo. By the way, it might very well also apply to during the 50s and the 60s. There were countries that kept bringing up in the United Nations the a plan to change the calendar, that every year you'd have the same calendar. January 1st would be on Sunday, and that was it. And somehow or other, Shabbos would be removed, because at the end of each year, if there's an extra day, that day would be called World Day. And it would not count. In other words, so like, you just live through the day, and it has no date. I mean, this was a serious problem during the 50s. It was a serious problem. And the Catholic Church was behind it too. What they were going to do with their Sundays, I don't know. That didn't make any difference. They'd have their Sundays, but their Sundays wouldn't be true Sundays, because once you had the World Day in the middle, it means the everything has changed. And the only thing that they, what could they have had in mind? They could have had in mind only l'hashnoya zimnin bedat. If you destroy time, then you have destroyed religion as well. To them, it didn't make any difference when their Sunday is. You just call it Sunday, and you have a 10.5-pound New York Times. Then that has a din Sunday. You don't need any more than that. Rav Yehuda HaLevi in the Kuzari brings as one of the proofs that all mankind came from one man and one family, and God created the world. So he says, because there are certain things that are accepted by all of mankind without question. That the unit called a week, what is there that could have moved man, if you are to say that man created the week? I mean, the fact is, intellectually and logically, it makes no sense whatsoever. In other words, a month, you can understand, man could have accomplished and achieved the idea of a month, because there is a natural phenomenon that makes a difference. The moon makes a complete revolution around the earth. So therefore, you can mark time by that, the period of month. The period of day also has clear boundaries. And it was evening, and it was morning, and it was one day, because the sun rising and setting and night all make up one unit. But what unit makes up a week? Nothing. Unless, of course, the world was created in 6 days and God rested on the seventh. That became the pattern for all time. Otherwise, the week has nothing. Nothing that marks it off in any way, one part of the week from the other. All right. Let's finish the chapter. We have a lot to talk about, but right. V'dina yitav. In justice yitav, he will sit in justice. Who's going to sit in justice? The ancient one, the Sholtonei Yahadun, and its rule, Yahadun, he will remove, Lahashmada, Ulahovada, Ad Sofa, to destroy and to remove utterly until the end. O Malchuta, the Sholtona, Urevuta, the Malchavot, Kol Shmaya, and kingdom, and rule and greatness, malchuta, shaltana, uravuta, the malchavat kol shmaya, kingdom beneath the entire heavens, yehivat will be given la'am kadisha yayonim. After this last one is going to be removed and destroyed utterly, the kingdom is going to be given to the the people that are Kadisha Yonin, Malchutei, Malchut Alam, kingdom is a kingdom forever. The Chol Shol Tanaya and all other rulers, Le Yiflechon will serve him, will serve Israel, V'yishtam'un, and will listen to them. Ultimately, the kingdom of the world is going to be the kingdom of the Jewish people. Yes? He said the kingdom will be destroyed. He didn't say the people will be destroyed. Kingdom, the ability to rule, power, will be removed from them. He never said that the people will be destroyed. Amalek is a people that has to be destroyed. No, 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 no. Here we're talking about kingdom. Here we're talking about kingdom. We're not talking about them being destroyed.
How could that be the great kingdom if after that destroyed Jews
were all there? So therefore, that's why I would not be caught with that question. It's therefore I said that this fourth kingdom is open to many interpretations, and all of the interpretations are really what it means. Sure, because otherwise, if the fourth kingdom is Greece, then when it's over, it's over. We should have been in the millennium 2,500 years ago. So obviously, this fourth beast with its 10 horns represents an ongoing kingdom starting from Greece. Sure. Well, you can say three, depending on how you count, Bavel. You see, this is another one of the things the Mefarshim deal with. In the dreams that Daniel has, why does the dream always begin with Bavel? The first beast, the lion, is Bavel. No. But it happened already. That's part of the past. Why is he in a vision? In a vision, he's shown a kingdom that is about to end. Now, this chapter was in... What was the first pasuk in this chapter? First pasuk in this chapter is... Tishnat Chagol Belshazzar, the first year of Belshazzar. The next chapter is going to be Bishnat Shalosh Malchut Belshazzar. Next chapter, chapter 8, is going to begin where it begins in Hebrew. The Hebrew part of the Sefer. It's in the third year of the kingdom, which means that the next prophecy, which is going to be a continuation of the one that he has here, is at the very end of the kingdom of Babel. It's coming to an end. The Farshim say that the reason why he's being shown this in each one of his dreams is he should know how to count. In other words, he should know that number one, there are four kingdoms. Number one is out of the way. You don't have to worry about number one. Number one is coming to an end. There'll be two and three and four. And obviously the fourth. By the way, you know, the fourth does have a... Chazal give the fourth a face. If the first is a lion, the second is a bear, and the third is a leopard, the fourth has no face. But Chazal give it a face. You know what face it gives it? Chazir. Rome is referred to as Chazir. Yecharsimenu Chazir miyad, Rapsukim and Mamarei Chazal. They give a picture and a face to this fourth one. But yes, it's obviously going to include all the elements of history.
Rabbi, maybe it's a concept from Israel, the
revelation. Oh, it definitely is. That's for sure. We're going to see that. We're going to see that. We're going to see that it's absolutely, because remember, what did the pasuk we just learned said? The pasuk before said they're going to wage war with Am Kadosh Elyon. It's going to be a battle against Am Kadosh Elyon. I don't know if you read the. it's amazing. There was an interview in this week's Time magazine with Osama bin Laden, Yimach Shemai V'Zichrei. You have to read the way this fellow talks about the Americans and the Jews. You know, I sort of thought that that kind of anti-Semitism and pure mad hatred of Jewish people went out of style. But the truth is, I shouldn't be surprised. Egypt and the Palestinian Authority are the worst purveyors of. Worst purveyors of anti-Semitism. What there was a business that they used Christian blood or Muslim blood. We used or something. Mashallah for Sufganiyot. I don't know. Something like that. This was the Palestinian Authority, understand? We use blood of children for all sorts of... I mean, we're talking about... Yes, the kingdoms refer to an ongoing struggle against the Jewish people, but he's being told as it's going to end, and we are going to become the rulers. Yes? Oh, that for sure. For sure, Nazi Germany. But it's not only Nazi, and the Crusades, remember, Chazal saw it as Christianity. Mefarshei HaTanakh saw it as Islam, and each one saw it as the great threat in their own day. And by the way, both have been an ongoing threat. Both Islam, the Muslim world, and the Christian world have been the blood enemies of the Jewish people. Unless, of course, you raise $60 million for them, and you lock hands for them, and you're going to start building all sorts of... projected, yes.
No, I want to say that the first three beats are actually simple. The fourth beat is a very complicated vision, and I think it means that the fourth kingdom will have very many facets. Each horn, each...
So, exactly. The others are all simple to the point. This one is far more complex, and because of its complexity, it lasts longer, and it includes all sorts of other possibilities. But remember, Daniel is seeing this a long, 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 long time ago. Now,
maybe the first year indication of growing the expectation of the world against against the Jews, reaching the climax of the fourth one, where it becomes so overwhelmingly. I think the whole four are.
All right. Now,
so
you're going to see in the next chapter, there's going to be a fascinating dream, and all of a sudden he doesn't see beasts of the field anymore, but he sees domesticated animals. A ram, I don't know, a reindeer, I have to figure out the names are, but he's going to begin to see domesticated soft animals. So, okay, so they'll go by themselves. Okay. Yes.
Nebuchadnezzar's dream. Is there any independent stuff that's substantiated that he had in Persian literature or anything secular sources?
Good question, but I can't answer the question right now. I'd have to do homework.
Why is the question relevant? Because obviously the fact that Nebuchadnezzar's dream was a smaller version of history.
Yes, exactly. Very good way to put it.
He took it to everybody of the time. It was historically validated. And he was the strongest person on time. And it was a clearly independent message to the Jews as well as the other nations of the world. And whatever Daniel sees in this dream, the more... detailed version of a message that was sent outside of the Jewish people and corroborated by independent sources.
Yeah, it would be fascinating if it would be corroborated. Even though I don't know why, you know, it's fascinating because we always feel good, you know, when a guy pats us on the back and, you know.
There's always an element of self-doubt, at least for me, whether this message is something self-serving to validate ourselves, something that's totally independently.
Except, of course, I'll tell you, one thing is fascinating here. About the time of Daniel, about when he lived and when this was written, there are no doubts among scholars. It's clear that this was already written and in the hands of the Jewish people before King Beasts 2, 3, and 4. That's for sure. In other words, scholars with a very small s have all sorts of questions about when Torah was written. But here we're talking about the end of the period of prophecy, and we know who Daniel was, and we know when he lived, and we know when it was written, which means for sure, certainly, it was written in the hands of people before Beasts 2, 3, and 4. Which means that even if we cannot corroborate whether Nebuchadnezzar had that dream, but that Daniel is clearly the truth, and they were able to see in advance, somehow or other, they had some kind of an indication what was going to happen, this is very, very clear.
Neck out by having
a what?
By Nebuchadnezzar having had this dream and going to all the people in his kingdom in a historically documented period that we have records still today. In other words, there's no question that this period is not like a timing problem or a dating problem. It happened, it existed historically after this reference to that period, and so on and so forth, right? By having the king have so publicly done and made statements and those statues and all these other things, which theoretically
are
left records, you know, absolute
records. Well, so all right, I'll do that homework. I'll do that homework. You have to understand something else. Many of the records of those periods were completely destroyed and were beneath the sands of time. If anything, any work that has been done archaeologically to find anything has only taken place in the last 100 years, for more than 2,000 years, 2,500 years. Babylon was absolutely lost from the face of this earth. Gone. Not only they were gone, Greece and Rome, what is it, I'm reading Time magazine. So this week they also have, I wasn't feeling well last night, so I read Time magazine. Otherwise, I wouldn't do it. I stopped reading it a long time ago. No, they unearthed in Salonika. They unearthed a bathhouse, really. There are those who say it was an ancient brothel. It was quite, maybe it's fitting that this is the kind of thing that they're able to discover beneath the sands of time. I mean, quite an elaborate thing. But the point that I want to make is that there's very little left of all of those civilizations. For example, even about and many of the Mepharshim of the Tanakh, for example, will bring certain tablets that were found from the time of the Assyrian kingdom. There's a certain tablet that was found that really showed that so much in Tanakh about the Assyrian invasions of Eretz Yisrael and the fall of Assyria, all were written on that tablet. The only one thing, one tablet by somebody who wrote a history of the time at the time. If that wouldn't have been found, we would have had no corroboration for any place. There's nothing left. We're the only ones that really have anything left because everything remained alive. But Babel, Mamish, disappeared. Huh?
No one did excavations.
Yeah, but if you make excavations, doesn't necessarily mean that you find. So you can find buildings. You can find buildings. That's why I said about Assyria, about Ashur, there was a tablet that was found with a history of the time. And Mamish, it fits Tanakh to a T, perfectly. But if they're going to find ancient buildings, they have unearthed ancient buildings of Babel. That ancient buildings of Babel are not necessarily going to tell me anything about Nebuchadnezzar's dream there. We would need documents. We would need papyrus. I don't think anything exists. But I'll look.
Why don't you go? Had even more impact on Daniel because he knew the same message he sent to the most powerful man. He's just getting a clearer picture.
He certainly is getting. He's getting much more of a picture.
But he must have known this was a very clear message that he was, that the whole thing wasn't disclosed in the initial kind of interpretation.
Let's. As you're talking to me, I have another question that's bothering me, and I think that this is a question we're going to have to work on over the next few weeks. why is he being shown this? In what way is all of this going to help the Jewish people? What's the point? Well, give them hope that you should know about, just hang in, about 2,500-3,000 years down the line, everything is going to be okay. That's the problem. That's what's bothering me.
Same thing should be bothering us. You know,
well, it doesn't bother us. I'm not bothered by the fact that I'm while at one point I thought that I was going to see ultimate redemption in my day, and now I'm not so certain about it anymore. Of course it bothers me. Because my hopes had been raised. My hopes hadn't been raised, so okay, but hopes have been raised. What's the point of Daniel knowing this? Is the point so that later on, rest your hand. You don't have to hold it up. I'll get to you. Is it simply so that we 2,500-3,000 years later can read that, you should know, Daniel was given a picture of history? Maybe that's so, but I'm not sure right now at this point. What's in it for us? Why does God want that Daniel should see this? So I say, this is a question that we have to think about. Yes. He wrote it. He wrote it because he knew that this was either a divine inspiration or it was prophecy. And then the decision that it should be included in the holy writings was made by the Anshe Knesset HaGadolah. The Gemara says, Nevuah shehutz rechol doros, Nevuah, that prophecy that was necessary for all generations, was written and codified and became part of the Kiskei HaKodesh. There were many other prophecies that were written. Nevuah shehutz rechol doros, Nevuah, that was not necessary for all generations, was not. Which means there's something here that is hutz rechol ledorot. And I would like to get something here that's necessary for all generations. Yeah? So I don't know. If the somebody reads Yeshayahu, what Yeshayahu has to say about Babel, in chapters 13, 14, 15, and 16, you should know by the time Yeshayahu gets finished with Babel, 150 years before Babel even appears on the scene of world history, by the time Yeshayahu is finished with Babel, there's nothing left of Babel. And then if you're going to add to that what Yirmiyahu says in chapters 50, 51, and 52, whatever was left after Yeshayahu is so utterly crushed. I it's difficult for me to believe that the necessity for Daniel was, you know, the coup de grace finishing off Babel. I think that his purpose is the things that are not said by Yeshayahu and Yirmiyahu. Yeshayahu and Yirmiyahu don't talk about kingdoms in between. They do talk about some of the kingdoms of their time or those going to come after that time, and then the ultimate Biyak HaMashiach. But they don't talk about the ones in the middle. Daniel talks about the ones in the middle. But I'm saying it's food for thought. Yes.
Strengthen the
emunah
of the Jewish people in relying on the Torah and
but you know, we do feel a little, we feels good, you know, because somehow or other we're always looking over our shoulder to see you know, if we have the approval of others. But you're right, for us the text here should be the
issue. I don't know if it's approval so much. The feeling I get is that there are so many in the world, and even among our Jews, who call this myth and who think that we're, you know, all kinds of crazy. And when something is confirmed by archaeology, my feeling is not, gee, good, we're getting a pat on the back. My feeling is, see, we're not crazy. That's it.
And then they'll turn around and they say, you are crazy.
Yeah.
All right, let me finish this chapter quickly. I moved my page. Just a moment. We're at the end of chapter 7. Yeah. Up until here, so for the milsa. Till here, this is the end of the words. I'm not Daniel. I, Daniel, Sagi, this is a word that we've had a number of times. Sagi, great, much. Rayonaye vahalunani, my thoughts caused me to tremble. And the countenance of my face changed. The pallor, the color of my face changed. And in my heart, I watched and guarded these words. Natar is like shamar. V'aviv shamar et hadavar. When Yaakov hears the dreams of Yosef, of it, Natar and Shamar, Natar in Aramaic, and do we have it in modern Hebrew? That's Nokein v'Noter. By the way, it's interesting. There is a relationship. A Noter is somebody who takes revenge because he keeps the anger in it. Not fair. Tov me'od. And over here it means the word, here it means mamash shomer. Now, you know what I did prepare for you for today again? Brich Shemei and Korivon, because we have arrived. You know, I'm going to give it to you for homework. We'll start it now, and I'm going to give it to you for homework.
Oh, God.
Wait, where is it? Didn't I give it? Where are my sheets? Alright. No. You don't understand what's happening to me now. Don't bother. Don't bother.
What happened to you? Is this what happened to all of
you? No. Wait a minute. Get out of here! Gosh, Mom! Get out of here! I knew, I thought it was going crazy. Does this happen to you?
Yes.
All right, let's begin. And I want to see if you remember to bring them next week.
Gave it to us once.
I know I gave it to you once. But I didn't expect you to have it today. I don't make demands upon you. He still has it. Charles Schiff still has it. All right. If I'm not mistaken, and this is up to you, of course, if you review these chapters, I believe you're going to find nearly every word in Carby Bone, every word. And maybe we will, first we'll go through it, and then we'll make comments next week in Yetzer Hashem as to where it is. But I want you, does anybody know who wrote Curry Bone?
Yeah.
Very good. Yisrael. Ah, you'll be thrilled to know what his last name was, and where he was rabbi, and in what century he lived. It was written by Rabbi Yisrael Najara. You know where Najara is? Okay. You can make a right into Najara from Givat Shaul if you're a taxi or a bus. If you're a private car, you can't go in. But you can make a
left.
You can't make a left, but you can make a right from Kamfei Nisharim into...
No, from Najara onto
Or from Najara, you can make a right onto Kamfei Nisharim. I think it's terribly important... All this, but I think it's terribly important. Here we have streets that we don't know. Rabbi Yisrael Najara.
Weren't the Israelis wonderful that they did know?
They didn't know either.
So how they took
them? All right, okay, they knew. Okay, the Israelis were wonderful. They knew. Okay. Right, yeah. By the way, he was a Talmud of the Arizal, one of the great Chachmei HaKabbalah. And that was in the 16th century, 1550, 1560. And he was Rav, you know where? Aza. He was the Rav of Aza. There was a big, thriving Jewish community in Aza, and I don't know how many years Rabbi Yisrael Najara was the Rav of Aza.
You should do, you should write up a little history of the streets of Cairo.
Oh, really?
By the way, from...
I wonder who these people are. That the
well, first I'm going to have to find... I did find out about Chacham Shimon Agassi, the one on whose block we lived. There were a few Shimon Agassis. I'm still trying to find out about Chai Tai, but I have an ainikel called Chai, so... you know, that will help. By the way, it's not Mishkalov. Mishkalov! Nobody will ever know anymore. They'll think it's somebody or someplace called Mishkalov. The Americans killed the word. Mishkalov. There is no Mishkalov. Mishkalov. But there were two Mishkalovs. There was Rabbi Nachum Mendel Mishkalov and there was Rabbi Yisrael Mishkalov. Rabbi Yisrael Mishkalov, and I think the street is named after Rabbi Yisrael, he was from the Talmidim of the Vilna Gaon. Rabbi Nachum Mendel Mishkalov was a Talmud of the Baal Shem. In other words, one of was the Gedolei HaChassidus and one was the Gedolei HaMismagdim. The one I'm having difficulty trying to find out who was HaKablan. Huh? What? Yeah, we heard a drasha from a rav by the name of Kablan, but his name is not HaKablan. All right, okay. But Rabbi Yisrael Najara. Interesting enough that lately, I don't know, in scholarly journals, I came across some other information about Rabbi Yisrael Najara. He liked to drink. He was a goyin adir. And he wrote 450, at least 450 poems. The most famous, of course, is Korribon. And the Korribon really has nothing to say about Shabbos. But despite that, it became one of the most popular zmiras of Shabbos. Now, of course, when it's sung, and this upsets me no end, the first word of Korribon is Yud-Hei, which is the name of God, so therefore when it's not being said in its context, you say Ka. But if you're singing, you don't sing Friday night Korribon, you sing it as it is written, the Yud and the Hei pronounced as Yud-Hei. And I don't know, everybody's so frum these days, you can't... Now, over here we have the Hebrew as well, but... so much of Daniel should come back to you. Let's go through it. So at least you'll know it for this Friday night. Korribon Olam V'Omaya, God the Master of Olam Omaya, all of the worlds. Ant, or how many times do we have Ant or Ano, I or you? Ano Daniel is I. Ano, Ant is you. Antu Malko, you are the king. Melech Melchaya, king of all kings. Ovad gevurtach, the deeds of your greatness, and your timhaya. Timhaya means wonders, and it comes from the word, it's also used in Hebrew, something that timahon, something that I wonder about, or something that I question about. And a pele, something that is nifla, is something about which I wonder. Shefar kavdamach lahachvaya. Two or three times it was said. Nebuchadnezzar said it, and somebody else said it. That it's nice, it is beautiful. Kavdamach before you lahachvaya to express your greatness. Shefar, shefar is beautiful or nice. By the way, not only are there shiputim and shiputzim. There are also shipurim. Shipurim means to make something nicer, to decorate it. Of course, the word is going to be used in the last sentence of Korribon, where Yerushalayim is described as Karta Dishufraya, the beautiful, beautiful city. Karta Dishufraya. Karta is a city. Back to the second parable. Shvachin Asader, praise for you, I will organize or present them Safra v'Ramsha, morning and evening. Safra, we did have a word a bit related to Safra, morning. right? Loch Elokor Kadisha. Before you, the holy God, Dibroch Kol Nafsho, who created all souls. Eden Kadishin. And we had that. Eden Kadishin. Eden Kadishin are the holy angels, Uvnei Anosha, and people. Chevab Bera, the Ofei Shemaya. The beasts of the field, Bros, the great outdoors. Chevas, Chevas, how many times have we heard it? The Ofei Shemaya. You remember the great tree on which all Ofei Shemaya, the birds, the fowls of the heaven, live there. Ravrivin Ovadoch, V'takifin. Great are your deeds and mighty. Mochich Remaya. Vizakev kifithim. Mochich Ramaya means Ramaya is a person who feels himself to be Ram. Mochich Ramaya means that God brings down the haughty, Vizakev, and he makes tall, straightens kifithim, the ones who are bent. Lu yichye givar shinin alfin, if a man would live for 1,000 years, Lo yeo givurtech bechuz benaya, he would not be able to make a cheshbon. He will not be able to list and count all of your greatness. Eloko, the God delay yikar urevuto. Didn't we have urevuto? We just had in Pasuk 27 in this parak, and we've had it a number of other psukim. Umalchuto v'sholtono urevuto. He says Eloko. The God delay Yakar. Yakar has been in our parak Uruvuta, the God to whom there is honor and greatness. Perok yap Anach mipum aryevata. Every word except Anach. Anach is the only word that didn't appear in Daniel. Perok yap Anach, redeem your sheep mipum aryevata, from the mouth of the lion. Redeeming your sheep from your shepsalach. From the nations that want to destroy. So, Peruk, you remember Daniel after Nebuchadnezzar had his dream that tells him that he's going to turn into a beast. So Daniel tells him, Peruk, you can redeem yourself by doing charity. And of course, Pum, we had a number of times with regard to the lions, and we have it in this chapter with regard to the little horn that has a Pum, a mouth that speaks terrible things. Aryavatas, of course, the lion. Va'apek yat amech, and take out your people, migo galuta, from the midst of the exile. Amach divachar, the people that you chose, mikol umaya, from all nations. Umaya we had also a number of times. Limigdashach tov, return to your Bet HaMikdash, ulekodesh kudshin, and to the Holy of Holies, atar, the place. Atar is, of course, a word that is used in modern Hebrew as well. The site, Atar Binya, the local municipal commission that decides on places for different public buildings is called Va'adat Ha'iturim. To La'ater, to locate, and one of the government agencies is the Haredi Meir Sharam group that worries about bones are called Atra Kadisha. In Kaddish we say Dibichol Atar Va'atar, in all places. So he says Atar Dibei Yechedun, the place Dibei Yechedun. The translation over here is good. It says Yechedun means to be full of joy, ruchin v'nafshin, spirit and soul. Where do we have yechedun or something like it in Torah? Excellent. Vayichad Yitro al kol ha-tovah. At the beginning of Parashat Yitro, when Moshe tells him everything that God did for the Jewish people, it says Vayichad Yitro al kol ha-tovah. He was full of joy about all the good that God had done for the Jewish people. There is, of course, a second pshat in Rashi over there. I see somebody shaking her head. There's a second pshat in Rashi, Vayichad Yitro, that his body became chidudin, like it was being pricked with pins and needles. because when a guy, even until a ger, even until 10 generations, still feels badly about what happened to his fellow goyim. For yizamnu lach, and they shall sing before you shirin ve'rachashin, songs and praise, b'Yerushalayim, karta d'shufraya, in Yerushalayim, the city of beauty, the city of beauty. Neil, I think there may be two or three words in all of Kari Bone that we have not come across during all of these chapters. Next week, you better save this for next week. I don't know if I'm going to be that good and bring you... but Brich Shmei may even be more fascinating. I'll tell you, one of the things that bothers me about Brich Shmei, it's so beautiful, and many people don't say it, or if they say it, they don't know what it means. The moment you will know what it means, you will become Brich Shmeiniks. You'll see, I promise you. Okay. Huh? That's what you have over here. No, the Rinas Yisrael Siddur. Our Rinas Yisrael Siddur. All right, all three tape recorders. Let's